Meta Practice V1. Part. The Case, Chapter 1. Why so much of modern life feels hard. Part. The Case. Chapter 1. Why so much of modern life feels hard. A lot of people, right now, do not feel okay. They are anxious. They are tired all the time. They cannot focus. They feel behind. They lie awake at 2 in the morning running through the day's small humiliations. They look at other people's lives and feel quietly worse about their own. They feel like a fraud at work. They feel numb when they should feel something. They feel restless when they should feel rested. They scroll for an hour, look up, and cannot remember what they were looking for. They feel like they should be happier than they are. They feel guilty about feeling that way, because by most measures, things are fine. If any of that sounds familiar, you are in extremely good company. The names we have for these feelings are everywhere now: anxiety, depression, burnout, imposter syndrome, brain fog, languishing, low-grade dread, decision fatigue, screen exhaustion, social media envy, perfectionism, the Sunday scaris, I just feel off. Each of these names is real, and each of them refers to something a real human being is genuinely going through. None of them are signs that anything is wrong with you as a person. But here is something worth noticing. Many of these labels point at the same underlying experience from slightly different angles. They are different names for a single uncomfortable feature of modern life, an inner sense that the day is being lived by several different people taking turns, and that none of them are quite you. What that actually feels like. Most of us would say, if asked, that we are one person. Of course we are. There is one body, one name, one set of memories, one continuous life. But pay a little attention to what an ordinary day actually feels like, from the inside, and a stranger picture starts to appear. In the meeting at 10:30, you are professional, careful, watching for slights, half rehearsing what you'll say next. At lunch, you are warmer with the friend you trust, slightly performative with the colleague you're trying to impress. At 3 p.m., you are tired and short with people. On the phone with your mother, you are someone you haven't been all day. On Instagram, you are someone else again. At home with your kid, you find yourself softer than you were 10 minutes ago. In bed at midnight, you are a much sadder person than the one who ran the morning meeting. None of these are fake. None of them are not you. But you are not the same person across them. You are a sequence of slightly different people, taking turns running the same body, depending on what the situation seems to demand. This is so common that we mostly do not notice it. We just call it being adaptable, or reading the room, or being good at my job. And sometimes, really, that's all it is. People do reasonably need to behave differently with their boss than with their toddler. But there is a quieter, harder version of the same pattern, and it is the cause of a great deal of modern suffering. It is what's happening when adapting starts costing you something, when by the end of the day you cannot remember what you actually want, only what each version of you wanted in each moment. Why it wears you out. This kind of constant inner switching is exhausting in a way that ordinary effort is not. Ordinary effort is one person doing hard work. Inner switching is several different people, with different priorities, taking the wheel in succession. Each handoff is small. Done 100 times in a day, it adds up to real fatigue. It also accounts for why so many specific labels, anxiety, burnout, imposter syndrome, languishing, feel so much alike from the inside. Anxiety often shows up when one of those inner selves is afraid and another is trying to keep performing through the fear. Burnout often shows up when the version of you that says yes to every demand is permanently outvoting the version that needs rest. Imposter syndrome often shows up when the version of you who wants to be admired and the version of you who feels small are running at the same time, and you have no way to reconcile them. The label changes. The underlying problem, too many parts of you wanting too many different things, with no one in charge, does not. This is not a character flaw. It is, more or less, the standard condition of an ordinary life lived in a modern environment. Phones, work, money, status, relationships, news, ambition, each of these activates a different motive. None of them ask permission. By the end of the day, you have not lived one life. You have lived 20 short ones, none of them quite chosen. What most people do about it? The standard responses are familiar. People try to fix the inner noise by changing the outer life. They try to optimize their schedules. They try a new productivity app. They try a new diet. They try a new relationship. They try therapy. Therapy can be excellent and is often part of the answer. They try working harder. They try working less. They try a vacation. They try medication. They try meditation, briefly. They try buying something. They try just pushing through. Some of these help. Some help a lot. But many people notice, eventually, that whatever they try, the same uneasy inner texture comes back. The vacation ends. The new app gets boring. The promotion arrives, and then a few weeks later the small voice that said I'll feel better when I get there says, no, when I get to the next one. The labels shift around. The underlying sensation does not. This is a hint. It suggests that a lot of what gets called anxiety or burnout or not enough is not, at root, an outer life problem. It is an inner orientation problem. And no amount of optimizing the outer life will reach it, because the difficulty is happening one layer beneath that. The question underneath. The argument of this book is that a great deal of ordinary suffering eases when a single, durable orientation runs underneath the day. Not a mood. Not a personality. An orientation, a stable way of meeting whatever shows up. When that orientation is in place, the small inner switches cost less, because they are all variations on the same underlying stance. You are not becoming 5 different people in the morning. You are one person, meeting 5 different situations, from the same warm place. The orientation that does this best across thousands of years of testimony, and now across a substantial body of contemporary psychology and neuroscience, is something the ancients called metta. In English, it is usually translated as loving kindness. The plainer name is warmth, care for yourself, for the people you love, for strangers, for difficult people, for everything that lives. It is not a feeling that arrives by accident. It is a stance you can train, return to, and live from. This may sound either too simple or too soft to be the answer to anxiety, burnout, and the other names for modern unease. The rest of this book is the case that it is exactly the answer, that durable warmth is one of the most powerful, well-tested, and accessible tools any human being has for organizing a life that does not feel like it is constantly coming apart at the seams. It is simpler than most of the things people try. It is also, when actually practiced, one of the few interventions that holds up under scrutiny across both the older traditions and modern laboratories. Before we get to the practice, though, the next chapter does one more piece of preparation. It looks at the other orientations, the smaller, narrower stances that quietly take over when no central one is in charge. Once you can see them clearly, the case for the alternative becomes much harder to ignore.